Welcome to the Movies to Watch Before You Die podcast. My name is Gab, and I'm here with my cousin and co-host,
Dylan.
And today, we are talking about a movie that I nominated as one to watch before you die. It is a funny family movie. I realize now that I don't have anywhere to end this sentence. I am having a hard time landing this plane. I don't even remember what year the movie came out. So I'm just going to get right to it and say this movie is Easy A, starring Emma Stone and some other people.
2010 is the year.
2010.
By the way.
Thank you. Okay, yes. Cool. Because on my train ride home, on my subway ride home, I was thinking, I vaguely remember watching this movie in high school for the first time, but it might have been in college. But if it was 2010, that was the year I graduated from high school. So I likely saw this movie in the summer between high school and college, which explains why at the time I found it to be so good and so relatable, because it is a high school movie.
It's very much, I feel like there's been episodes of this podcast where you talked about teen boy movies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a total teen girl movie. Not that I'm saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm like,
sure.
Oh, it's the other side of the spectrum, which,
yeah.
Boy, does it say something that the other side of the spectrum is like more introspective on like how important is sexuality and whether or not, you know, you are a virgin and owning your sexuality. Meanwhile, the boy side is like, booze.
Yes. 1,000,000%. Isn't it funny how much smarter and like deep a movie targeted for girls is than one targeted for boys? What does that say about us as a society?
That men are dumb.
That's yeah. Yep.
Like at our base, we are violent, horny creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly. Interesting. Okay. Well, I'm glad that you noticed that. Why don't you, Dylan, describe to me in great detail what this movie is about?
What's this all been about? What am I working toward?
You think you know everything about me, don't you?
I die at your bottom. I bloody well ought to.
Easy A is about Emma Stone, who plays Olive Pendergast. Yes, it's Pendergast.
Correct.
Definitely feel a burp coming, but I'm going to stifle it back. I've got this. So Olive,
you can
is...
feel free to burp. I'm not offended by this.
Thank you. Olive is talking with her friend Rhiannon and makes up an excuse that she's meeting up with a boy to get out of plans with her. After that, her friend assumes that they've had sex, that she's lost her virginity, and she goes from being what she feels and perceives as a nobody in the school to being perceived as a somebody, but is it the somebody she wants to be, because she's now known as like the school floozy, and she sort of makes a pseudo business of it by being, she becomes the village bicycle for pay. She's like, she's a whore in every sense, but without the sex, but she's owning it. It's ironically a lot like I just watched Emma Stone in Poor Things, where it's like her figuring out and owning her sexuality as she becomes an adult woman in that movie. Mm-hmm. They're obviously very different tonally, but it's basically her figuring out at first, she's like, hey, I'm helping out, you know, people like her friend Brandon, who is gay, but he's just trying to get through high school and he doesn't want people to know he's gay. So they pretend to have sex so that people will think he's straight. And then she sort of becomes the village bicycle for gift cards. And by the end of it, it's her deciding how much she wants to take in stride and how much, where's the line for her. And she's dealing with also Amanda Bynes as Marianne, who is leading a right-wing church group against her.
A holy crusade, if you will.
Oh, that's much better than what I said.
Yep.
Yes.
So when I said in great detail or in as great detail as possible, I didn't mean it literally. Do you want to try again and give your like quick IMDb?
Do you want me to read the actual IMDb one, or do you want me to go for my logline?
I kind of wanted you to go for yours,
okay.
Just to see how close.
Olive lies about sex, and the lie spreads quickly.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool. What does IMDb have to say?
The IMDb plot summary: when Olive lies to her best friend about losing her virginity to one of the college boys, a girl overhears their conversation. Soon, her story spreads across the entire school like wildfire.
Oh, yeah. Clearly you read the IMDb plot summary before you gave yours.
Not just now, maybe like a week ago.
Oh, okay, good. Cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
Give us some credit.
How about some taglines?
Okay. I've got three taglines here, and I've got one that I came up with. Should I just mix and match them?
Yeah, because I'm going to vote which one is my favorite, and hopefully it's yours.
Okay. I'm going to need you to not look, because you'll be able to tell when I'm looking at two different things.
Okay, I'll close my eyes.
Okay. A comedy about a good girl, a small favor, and a big rumor.
Okay.
When the rumor becomes fact, believe the rumor.
Okay.
The rumor-filled, totally false account of how I ruined my flawless reputation.
Okay.
Let's not and say we did.
Okay, so my favorite, can I open my eyes?
Yes.
My favorite of all those is the last one. Let's not say we did.
Short and simple, yeah.
Yeah. Did you write that one?
I did not.
Oh.
But this whole movie made me think of, there's a famous quote, I can't remember what it's from, but it's, when the legend becomes fact, print the legend.
Uh-huh.
And the whole movie kept reminding me of that, because I kept thinking, when the rumor becomes fact, believe the rumor.
Yeah.
It's as topical as the Scarlet Letter is to the generation that this movie was made for, you know?
Yeah. Cool. Okay. What the hell do we do now?
I think now we can get into our opinions, unless you want to talk more about the movie's about, but I think I went pretty detailed at first there.
You did go pretty detailed. I mean, it's pretty basic, right? You have your high school rumor mill. I think the thing we really need to hammer home to anybody who hasn't seen this movie is that Emma Stone's character does truly start to charge people, mostly in gift cards, which I want to talk a little bit about. Charging people via gift cards to be able to say that they had sex with her. So it is truly like prostitution, except without the sex. She does not have sex with anybody in the movie, but it is as close to prostitution as you can get. And of course, she starts dressing in a way where she's wearing a lot of like lingerie tops with jeans and high heels and stuff like that. And it's more so than I remember. It is like strikingly, not strikingly, it's like alarming how she is truly like behaving like a prostitute. And not that I'm saying it's wrong or anything like that, just I think as an adult, it was like, oh my God, she's literally collecting money from people to give them permission to say that they slept with her.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't have any problem with it. There are things that I found problematic in the movie. It's not her. I think the whole time that she's fine and she is sort of just like, fuck it, I'm going to own it, you know?
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to get into opinions if I start talking about that, though.
Yeah. Let's make it a fish.
Don't hit me with fish.
Yes! Tell me that's not one of the best lines of any movie of all time.
It's truly not, but it will never die because of this podcast.
It's so good. And the way they cut away from him, because he clearly starts laughing, it is like the worst cut in
cinematography.
What, say the word for me.
Cinematography.
No, that's not the word I wanted. In cinematic history. It was so simple. Cinematic history. The worst cut in cinematic history, but the line needed to stay. I do not blame anyone in production. That they could not lose that line.
I mean, I bet you that's exactly what happened, that they were editing and they were like, I find it funny. I'm finding a way to leave it in there.
I'm keeping it in because they hard cut to like a completely different moment. Okay. So, as you were.
In this critic's opinion.
You know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Well, I have a right to my opinion, and my opinion is you have no right to your opinion.
Should I start by talking about things I don't like or things I do like?
I don't know. What, take your pick. I trust you. Follow your heart.
It was very interesting because I finished the movie and I was like, I really, really enjoyed it. And as I went like 5 minutes later, I kept thinking about things that sort of were annoying me, because the very first thing that annoyed me, Amanda Bynes is sort of a crucial character in this movie until the third act where she just disappears.
Huh. And
I really was waiting for, I have written in my notes that I was really expecting it to turn out that she's like, she's actually slutty and, you know, she's secretly slutty. Again, not that that would have been the end of the world, but it would have been she's been marketing herself as this goody two shoes person, roller. Holier than thou. Yes. She's been on a holy crusade, as you said, only to have it come out that she's the terrible one. And there was a second where I was like, I thought the movie was really going right that way, where this guy, Micah, who's in her holy group and her boyfriend, finds out he has chlamydia. That was like the worst hype manning ever. Instead of Flavor Flav's, yeah, boy, you're just like chlamydia.
Chlamydia.
But instead of finding out that, you know, Micah got chlamydia from Marianne, there's a guidance counselor played by Lisa Kudrow, who's already a terrible guidance counselor, who we find out is sleeping with a student. And the movie, like, very quickly makes it okay by being like, he was held back like four times. He's like 20 something. It's fine. And I'm like, ethically not fine, but sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then at the end of the movie, like, obviously spoilers, she agrees to lie for Lisa Kudrow and just say that she did it because everyone thinks that she did it anyway, because Micah lied about having sex with Olive. And it was like, this is not cool.
Well, I think the more interesting part of that whole storyline, because I don't disagree with you, I think the more interesting part is that Olive does go to the guidance counselor's husband, who's her favorite teacher, and say, Micah has chlamydia. He got it from your wife. They're having an affair. And then the husband and the wife get divorced.
Yes.
They both still work at the school. So it feels like there's no way that Olive lying for the guidance counselor would perpetuate this lie and have her keep her job. Because surely her husband, who was mad enough to end their marriage, is not going to allow that to just not have any consequences.
No, I think by the end of it, she does change her mind. Like, you know, there's a brief period of time where she lies for her. I just thought it was weird the way that Marianne disappears and never comes back.
Well, how would she have come back? Do you mean like she winds up being exactly who she says she is? Or do you mean that like character literally never comes back?
Either. Because she's literally just gone after a certain point. I think after she slaps Olive, because Olive allegedly gave Micah chlamydia, I think it's after that. There might be one more scene with her in it, and then she's just gone for the rest of the movie. You know, like she happens to visit the church, and her, you know, she realizes that Olive visits the church, and the pastor she's with is Marianne's father.
Fred Armistead, by the way.
Yes. And we just never see her again. And I really expected some sort of comeuppance there. And if not like a comeuppance, an epiphany on her part that it was like, oh my God, these were all lies, you know? And even if they hadn't been, why did I assume that that meant anything about you?
Do we not see, so the end of the movie, Olive does like a, what we would now refer to as like an Instagram live, right? Like a video vlog that's being live streamed of her confession so that people understand what the real story was.
Usher's Confessions Part 2.
Exactly. These are my confessions. Do we not see Marianne watching it in the end?
I don't remember if we do even, because if we do, it's not enough that she doesn't say anything. Like if we do, she doesn't have a line. If we do, we just see her seeing it.
So I think we've talked a little bit too long about the Marianne thing. I want to move on to some other stuff. Tell me what else bugged you.
Same thing, but with a different person.
Oh, whomst.
So at the beginning of the movie, we mentioned Rhiannon is her friend who she was avoiding hanging out with her parents because her parents are like, a bit nutty to her. And it sort of unfolds that each time she talks to Rhiannon, I kept thinking, she is a terrible friend, a horrendous friend. Like Rhiannon literally at every step does the worst thing a friend could do.
Yeah.
But by the end of the movie, she's still acting like she's like, oh, Rhiannon's my best friend. I can't do this. Like they have a big fight where they're like, we hate each other now. But then Olive goes on a date with, I can't remember what the boy's name is, but she goes on a date with him because she thought that he just wanted an actual date with her, which I think was very refreshing to her because she was so sick of everyone just wanting to pretend they had slept with her.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get into how the date goes later on, but it turns out that this is the boy that Rhiannon likes, and Rhiannon happens to be in the same restaurant. And Rhiannon, we see later, like, protesting against Olive, but we don't ever see the relationship mend, you know what I mean? Or totally break apart or anything. It just is left undone.
Yeah. I agree with you completely on both accounts.
It's not like this is a long movie. It's an hour 32 or something like that. So I was
quick.
Bro, give me 10 more minutes. Give me two more scenes, one with each of those characters to tie that together. Because I really enjoy almost everything else. I don't know why this cracked me up as hard as it did.
What? Tell me.
Okay.
I feel like we're going to be on the same page.
We find out that Marianne and her group protested the mascot being the Blue Devil, which was, can't remember the actor's name from the show You and Gossip
Girl. Penn Badgley,
and he comes out and he's got blue body paint on and he's dressed as a devil and he's got a pitchfork. And we find out that they changed it to the woodchucks. And I don't know why it cracked me the fuck up that he comes out with a fake piece of wood, a log, and he just starts going to town going, pretending to chew on this wood. And I was like, yup, that got me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree. That's a very funny moment. Do you have anything else you want to say before I share with you what I believe is the best part of this movie?
I'll share one more bad thing then.
Okay.
And not to say that these bad things outweigh the good things I feel or anything like that, but...
Dylan, this is a roller coaster of emotion. I understand.
I feel like you think that I hated the movie, and I truly
did not.
No,
I really don't.
Okay.
I do not.
Penn Badgley's character, Todd, because they call him Woodchuck Todd. They show this time when they were in middle school and they were doing 7 minutes in heaven, and he asks not to have the kiss. He asks her to lie about the kiss, which sort of, you know, obviously sets up what we have going on. And she agrees to it. And he never really says it, but she asks him at some point, like, why do you want to go on a date with me? Because by the end, of course, these two characters are ending up together.
Mm-hmm.
And he says something. I kind of like the line. He says, I don't know. I haven't overthought it like you're about to, which I like that line, but I wanted him at some point to say, you know, to confirm that, like, he knew the truth all along. He knew what kind of person she was, or he's always been interested in her or something like that. And maybe it's too cliche and we didn't need it, but I kind of wanted it, but I did really like those two characters and their dynamic.
Yeah, I feel like we didn't need it. I think at some point he says something about, you know, him knowing what kind of girl she is because he did it for her. He lied for her when they were in elementary school. So I do, or middle school or whatever. I remember him specifically saying that because for a hot second, Corey and I were like, was it the gay friend she was in the closet with?
That's what I thought it was, too. I didn't feel like it did a great job making that clear until Todd says something very specific.
Right. And that's when it was like, oh, of course, Todd knows that these rumors are fake because he has insight into what a good person she is and that she would lie for somebody. So I think that kind of debunks your little.
It debunks it enough that I was OK with not having it there, but I wanted it there. Go on, though. Let me hear what you got.
So the absolute hands down best part of this movie, and honestly, my favorite part and the part that has stuck with me and made me say, Dylan, we have to watch this movie, is, drum roll, please, Olive's parents.
Olive's parents, who are so unrealistic, but are great.
Stanley Tucci in that movie. I fell in love with Stanley Tucci in this movie, and I would bet any amount of money that if we go back to the Lovely Bones episode, I mention how fucking awesome Stanley Tucci is in Easy A.
You probably do. And honestly, it is like the total opposite side of the coin where he and, is it Patricia Clarkson, I think is her name?
Yeah.
Are the coolest parents ever, basically. Like, they're cool with everything because you get the sense that they do totally understand the character of their daughter. So they are not going to fall into these things very quickly. I do love, they have an adopted son who is African-American, and there's this great moment where the little boy says something about being adopted because, you know, Stanley Tucci, I think, says, oh, you got that from me. And Stanley Tucci does such a good, genuine, what? Who told you? No.
It's so great. He slams the cupboard shut, doesn't even turn around. He goes, oh my God, who told you?
We all agreed we were going to say it together. Yes, it's
so very good. I say that all the time. And it's like one of those things that just comes out like, oh my God, who told you? It's so good. And then there's a scene where Stanley Tucci. So the idea behind these parents' characters is that they understand that Olive is a good kid. There's a moment where they talk about how they don't even know how to ground her. They're like dinner without or bed without dinner. And she's like, I don't know how to be grounded any more than you know how to ground. And so, you know, they're kind of indicating that she's just such a good kid. They trust her. They're not worried about her. And at one point, her friend Brandon is his name, right?
Yes.
Comes over. He's the one who is gay. And they're kind of joking around about like, you know, Olive, your boyfriend is I don't remember how it comes up, but they're like something about like, you know, well, we're not worried about you since your boyfriend is gay. You know, they're very silly. And at one point, Stanley Tucci comes into her bedroom and says something to her about, you know, listen, I think it's really nice that your, you know, your gay boyfriend was here. Listen, I get it. I was gay once too. All God's children, we all do it. It's fine. And it's just, he goes on and on. It is so funny. It is my favorite moment.
I do also like the back and forth between the two of them when she rushes Brandon upstairs and she's making a joke of it too. She's like, a gentleman caller. Oh, finally. But when she goes upstairs, Stanley Tucci comes over and the mom and the dad are both together and they're both back and forth going, in Olive's room, there's a boy. A boy? In Olive's room? Olive's room, yes, a boy. My goodness, a boy. You know, and it goes on like that for a while, long enough it works. Good.
Yeah. I just think they are like so lovable and they just create such a great environment for a teenage girl to feel trusted enough to, you know, explore not necessarily her sexuality, but like her comfort level when it comes to other people judging her, because she doesn't have to worry about are my parents gonna think, are any of my teachers gonna think, you know what I mean? Like, she's just such a strong personality and so deeply grounded in who she is, and you can just tell that it comes from the parents, and it's just such a nice like little home environment. There's a moment where she gets in trouble for calling a girl in her class a twat. And she has to go to the principal's office and she's at home and her parents are like, well, what'd you call her? And she's like, oh, I don't want to say it. And Stanley, she goes, why don't you spell it with your P's? So she's like, oh, yes. And she starts spelling it out. And they're like trying to read it. And they can't figure out what it is. And they finally understand. And they're like, well, I'm sure she was acting like exactly what you called her. And it's just so nice.
Yes, it's very unrealistic, but it's an idealized version of like what every teenager would want their parents to do for them.
Yeah. I like when they're trying to guess. She's like, yeah, I called her a bad word. And they're like, what word? And she's like, it starts with a T. And they're like, T, 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 T.
Tallywhacker.
Yeah. Yeah. She says it's British slang. He goes, yes. Tallywhacker.
There's a blooper where Stanley Tucci does just scream out twat. And she goes, you got it. He goes, yes.
Oh, man.
They were all like, there's not many adult characters that matter. It's probably the two parents, I guess the guidance counselor, even though she doesn't really matter as a character, more as like her actions. And Thomas Hayden Church, who is just so immediately and instantly likable. Like, he just does such a good job of the first moment he's speaking. You're like, oh, I trust this character and he's nice. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
His English teacher?
Yes. You don't need any time to get to know him. Yeah.
Yeah. What else is he? I mean, I guess you'll talk about this, but where do I know him from?
Oh, you know, I'm from a bunch of things, which I will talk about. But
yeah.
You also have Malcolm McDowell, who's a very famous actor who appears like super briefly as the principal. And
yeah,
he had a line that I really like where he goes, this is public school. If I can keep the girls off the pole and the boys off the pipe, I get a bonus.
Yes, it's so good. And he's English, too. So he's got that. If I can keep the girls off the pole and the boys off the pipe, I get a bonus. It's so good.
That was like such a kind of close.
You're right.
You get half credit.
Thank you.
I will say I wrote down multiple times like, who are we telling the story to? What is the device here that she's talking into the webcam?
Oh, yeah. Did it resolve for you at the end or not really?
Yeah. Okay. Well enough.
Okay.
I did also like there's a joke that is so my humor that is like the kind of shit that I say every day where It's when Brandon comes over. He knocks on the door and he goes, "Is there an olive here?" And the mom, without missing a beat, goes, "There's a whole jar of them in the fridge." You know what I mean? I'm like,
yeah,
yes.
That is you.
Perfect response. Yeah. Any friend of olives is a friend of my daughter. Like,
yeah,
that works. That is chef's kiss. That is my humor. Yeah. It does a really good job of, it's mostly very lighthearted. And the one moment it gets a little serious towards the end really works when she goes on the bad date.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's the moment where I guess she realizes more than just her reputation, how poisonous the rumors have been.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guy she goes on a date with, who Rhiannon was interested in, she thinks is actually interested in going on a date with her, brings out a, I'm not sure if he brings out the gift card first or afterwards, but he starts attempting to kiss her. Then he brings out a $200 Home Depot gift card, which, terrible gift card choice. Nobody wants
Home
Depot gift card.
Especially not a teenage girl.
No, especially not. And he like fully is trying to act like she is a prostitute and is saying like, "Well, I gave you money." You know what I mean? And he keeps trying to kiss her and it's gross.
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Did you have more to that thought?
No, not really.
Did you ever watch Superstore?
No.
Damn. It's so good, Dill.
I don't think I've watched a network television show in at least 10 years.
Do you hate yourself?
No, I hate them. That's not true. I watch Abbott Elementary, but I have not watched any of season 3 yet.
Oh, I have. I've never watched that show.
It's adorable.
Oh.
Delightful.
Superstore was also really cute. I bring it up because one time I went to LA for work and I rented a car and I wasn't feeling well. So I had like a sinus infection where like I wanted to get Mucinex and some tissues and whatever. So I'm driving around looking for like a Duane Reade, which doesn't really exist in LA. And I see on a hill, Cloud 9. And I'm like, oh, I know that store. That's the store from Superstore. I'll just pull in and go in there. So I like pull into the parking lot and I'm trying to get close to park. And there's like this big gate and they won't let me in. I'm like, what the fuck? And they're like, this is the lot for a television show. You can't come in here. And I was like, oh my God, this is where they film Superstore. I thought it was a real store that I could go into. And the woman was like, no, turn around, get out. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I really thought I was about to go to like a Walmart.
Based on that response, do you think that happens to her a lot?
It must. It has to.
Because otherwise I'd be like, what a funny coincidence. But she was like, it's the seventh time today. Fuck off. Yeah.
That's how it felt. She was like, you're in the wrong place. Turn around. And I was like, oh, sorry. Okay. But I just assumed that maybe it was a West Coast thing. But no, Cloud 9 is a fake grocery store. But they did buy a Walmart and turn it into the set for this television show, which is interesting.
Cloud 9 also sounds like it'd be the name of a dispensary.
Yeah. You know what? I'm enough is enough with these weed stores. Every block, there are at least 10 of them. And they're all just like buying up this real estate. You know, there's one that opened right down the block from me. And I really wanted it to be like a vitamin shop or a GNC or something. And instead, it's just another fucking smoke shop. I'm over it.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, you're the only person in the world rooting for vitamin shops and GNCs.
And now every time I walk outside, like I go for a run and it's like I'm in a fucking cloud of smoke. And it's like, Jesus, why can't we like children live here? Like, why can't we make it like a health store or like a fucking get off your fat ass and go for a run store? Like, why has it got to be another smoke shop?
First of all, Gab, I believe the get off your ass and run store is called a gym. I think, again, if it was a liquor store, you wouldn't be saying like, there's people coming in and out with bottles and it's gross, you know? Who cares?
But they're not drinking out of the bottle on the street, I guess. I don't know. I feel like smoking is so much more disruptive. And I feel this way about smoking anything, right?
I feel that way about smoking cigarettes.
All of it to me is fucking annoying. And you know what? I have to go to work at such a crazy hour of the morning and they're all open 24/7. So I already feel unsafe walking to the train at like 4:45 a.m. And now I've got six fucking guys standing outside all smoking joints talking to each other. And I'm like, I don't want this. Because if this
what if
they've
got the
here...
reef of madness?
Shut up. I'm just saying like it's bringing people. There are no bars. Right. But all these people are hanging out now outside of these smoke shops at all hours of the morning. They've been there since probably late last night. And it's just annoying, like, especially when I'm trying to go to work and I'm a small but mighty woman.
I was gonna say, yeah, we've all seen your Instagram. I think you could knock someone's block off. You'll be fine.
Yeah, but if
I'm
there
gonna
are
hit you
more
with the
of
Michael
them.
Caine from Batman, I think it's Batman Begins line. What's the point of all them push-ups if you can't punch out a bloody hippie? I paraphrase, of
Wow, I
course.
love that. That's a good one.
You know what scene, to go back to Easy A, felt a little
Please
bad?
tell me.
Brandon tells this boy, Evan, about the fact that Olive faked it for Brandon, and that's how this whole thing starts. And they make a real point of showing Evan outside the pool being overweight and hairy in high school. And it, like, he gets this comeuppance where he's like, first he tries to offer her money to say that they made out or whatever, and she's like, no, absolutely not. And then he like threatens her with, you know, I don't even have to interact. Like, I don't have to pay you. I can just say it. They'll probably believe
Yeah.
me. And she, you know, gives him the comeuppance he deserves and tells him he's an asshole. And she's like, you know, if you'd ever just been nice and actually asked me on a date, I probably would have been interested. And he's like, would you want to go on a date? And she shuts him down. The only thing that I'm like feels gross about that scene, well, the interaction's a little gross, but he gets the comeuppance, is Evan goes and sits down. He's just come out of the pool and he's like, just a fat piece of shit anyway. It cuts to Olive, who's like, I should go talk to him. It cuts back to him, and he has somehow, after just jumping out of the pool, pulled a chocolate bar out of nowhere. And I was like, it's one step too far, movie. Leave the boy alone. Like,
I don't even think I noticed that he pulls out a chocolate
he
bar.
just has a somehow dry chocolate bar that he has pulled out of nowhere.
That is so funny. I felt really bad for him. I felt way worse for him than I did for any other character. And I think that I think he is the only one that really had like a sweet side to him that eventually comes out where it's like he's a nice guy.
Well, I think after Brandon, he's the only one that they flesh out a little bit more, and then it becomes sort of just montage-y of
Yeah.
this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. He's the last one that we sort of get more of a reason and how he's feeling type of thing. And by the end, they manage to make him look a little bit like a douche again because she's asking people to tell the truth after a certain point. And he's like, no way, I already paid you. And then he goes, besides, you know how many girls I've hooked up with based off of that? And I'm like, ooh, gross, Evan. Gross. That moment at the pool, though, is the one moment that I noticed visually that I really like too, where I think she tells, maybe I'm misremembering, but it's something like she tells Evan that he can do it, and the camera starts rushing around the school in quick motion and comes right back to her, and everyone knows already. And I was like, that's cool. That was a cool way of doing that.
I love that. How jealous were you of how, like, much exterior there was to that high school. They were literally like all hanging out outside.
Well, it also had that classic high school party that, like, did anyone actually have parties like this in high school? Like,
That
I
shit
wasn't
was
the coolest
crazy.
kid, but I don't think anybody was like, yeah, their parents are away every weekend and they have a total run of the house. I'm like, I don't think so.
The whole thing was like she's allowed to throw a party every time she catches her parents having sex in the pool, and it happens a lot. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Very strange, but I would argue that that is the like culminating scene, not culminating, what's the word I'm looking for? The like most famous scene in this film is the fake sex scene at the party.
Which that went on a little long for my liking, that I was like, I
Okay.
get the joke. I get it. Yeah.
In high school, or you know, the summer between high school and college, I thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my life.
It's funny, a lot of like the wordplay type jokes hit me really good. That didn't hit me that well, though. I was like, okay. But then when he comes out of the room and he's trying to like act straight, and they're like, how'd it go in there? And he's walking, he's like, let's just say I'm gonna have a hard time walking tomorrow. And the guys all stop for a second and are like, what does he mean by that? And he goes, I'm drunk. Like they're like, yeah. Like it was
I
just
thought that was so
stupid
funny.
enough that that worked. Yeah. Another line that I
Totally.
really like is Lisa Kudrow is the worst guidance counselor, but there's this interaction. I don't even remember who she's talking to. I think she's talking to Thomas Hayden Church, her husband. She goes, well, a kid brought a knife to school. And he's like, oh, and she goes, it was a butter knife. But you know what they say. It's a gateway knife.
I thought that was so funny. So I want to talk about how I felt about the movie, but I don't want to necessarily get into like verdict stuff because I feel like that's really all that I have left. What about you?
I have one more thing that made me laugh out loud that I want to point out.
Oh, good, good, good.
She's coming out, and I think this is after everything with Micah has happened. So there's a protest group against her, and they're holding up signs against Olive, and behind them is the Quiznos guy flipping a Quiznos sign. He's dressed in like a fake Quiznos cup or something. And she's walking past them, and she's walking past the Quiznos guy, and the Quiznos guy's like, "But Quiznos," as he flips the sign, and she's like, "Go away, Quiznos guy." And I think he said, "Whatever, slut."
Yeah.
It's like, it cracked me the fuck up because you didn't expect the Quiznos guy to go there. Yeah.
It was so good. So good. What did you think about them singing "Let My People Go," the church group?
I'm going to be honest, I think I mostly forgot about that because the church group didn't really work for me. And like I said, I kept being like, how did this all just kind of go away?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did
you have any crazy religious kids in your high school? Any like religion people?
I'm sure we did, but I'm also certain that I didn't associate with them, so I don't remember them. Not that I'm like anti-religion, but like I'm anti shoving your religion in someone else's face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't remember there being any religious kids in my high school, but I'll tell you what, the I am currently in a group that has a lot of religion, and that would be CrossFit. Because let me tell you, a lot of these people are so very religious. Nobody here, like obviously it's like a very, yeah.
I guess you could say Jesus was pretty CrossFit.
Oh, that's okay. All right. Yeah, 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 yeah. Okay. It took me a second and it's not great, but I'll let it go.
I was just waiting there staring at you like, ah?
There's a girl. I shit you not. I actually was going to make a really funny joke and I'm going to share it with you now. There's a lot of a humongous portion of the professional athletes are like astronomically religious, like more religious than I can fathom. And there's this one girl who's probably like 23 or 24 who is very much a contender to potentially win the CrossFit Games, if not now, then in the next few years, named Emma Carey. And Emma Carey randomly, apropos of nothing that we know of, posted an Instagram before the CrossFit Open saying, "I will not be competing in a much longer way than I'm about to paraphrase. I will not be competing in the 2024 CrossFit Games season because I am dedicating my time to work on my relationship with God," or something about, is my time in CrossFit serving God, or am I in CrossFit to serve God, or am I in CrossFit to serve myself? And I need to serve God, so I'm dropping out. So Corey and I just made it to quarterfinals, which is like the second round of the CrossFit season, which is like kind of a big deal. But people, basically everybody who made it to quarterfinals made it a point to post on Instagram, "I made it to quarterfinals." And it was one of those things where I was like, I just don't feel like I don't feel the need to like share with people that I made it to quarterfinals. And because it was just, my Instagram was flooded with people. And I really thought about posting, very proud to have made it to quarterfinals, but this will be the end of my 2024 CrossFit season as I intend to spend more time building my relationship with God. Thank you all for a great season. See you next year.
Oh, but I wanted you to go the other way. I will spend more time building my relationship with me.
How about with Satan?
I can't remember what it's from. It's got to be some sketch comedy show where it's an athlete and he's going, "We lost the game and I blame God for this. If he had been on my side so that I could make the last shot, we would have won."
100%. It is really funny. It's like so many of them are like, "I've trained really hard and now it's just up to God." And I'm like, surely God has more important things to deal with than whether or not you do good at the sport of working out fast.
I did hear that Emma Carey is competing at the next CrossFit Games, but the actual cross. I really went back to the well of the same joke. Yeah.
Same
no
joke.
Good.
Yeah.
No good.
Yeah. Try again.
Give me another minute. I'll make another joke that is the same.
I kind of want to read you the psychoticness of this post. And I have Instagram open, so this will only take a moment. It's really worth it. I just don't remember there being like people in high school who were interested in religion, but I'm sure this girl is 19. Her Instagram bio begins with, "I love Jesus!" exclamation point. She says,
what does Jesus's Instagram bio begin with? Does he reciprocate?
I doubt it.
Ooh.
Over the last few months, I felt God leading me to examine my heart, My first question in this task was, what is my ultimate desire? Blah, 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 blah. Is my ultimate desire to gain Christ or to win the CrossFit Games? Like, first of all, what? Do the desires of my heart align with a life surrendered to the expansion of his kingdom, or is my heart given to a self-centered life in order to meet the needs of my pride? Is my life in line with God's will, or am I trying to ask God to follow my will? Even more, am I doing CrossFit for the glory of God in order to magnify his name, or am I doing CrossFit for my glory and to magnify my name? And it's at this point that I was like, wow, she is 19. She is in for a rough fucking life. If she is already like, I can't pursue my own passion, I must only pursue God.
To each their own. Whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. As I know Christ more, I don't like my answers to those questions. I see that true obedience, comma, truly knowing him and loving him are infinitely more valuable, satisfying, and joyful than any accomplishment could ever be. I'm just like, what about going to college? What about having a career? Because if you can skip all of those things just to be like a big fan of God, I will just stop going to work. Like, that's fine. Do you agree?
She's going to go to Notre Dame, and then she's going straight into a nunnery.
I just feel like, do you get paid to be a nun?
No.
No?
Like, I think you get provided with housing.
Housing.
And that sweet tax-free life.
Tax-free. I mean, that's my biggest struggle. That's your biggest struggle. Don't you want to live a tax-free life, Mr. Accountant?
I think everyone wants to live a tax-free life, but we'll never be free of taxes. What do you think?
I know a couple of people who work professionally as like an RA, so they get to live for free in a dorm that's been renovated into like a real apartment, but they have to deal with undergrads vomiting all the time. Would you take that deal for free housing? Yes or no?
How much do I get paid?
I think it's not terrible, but your biggest expense is covered. You do not pay rent.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would. That's and you would not just a hard job.
Yeah, it's not a hard job.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can have a dog. You can have a you know, your wife can stay there. It's not
I would hope,
really
I hope
you
that
just have a sneak
you
wife.
Didn't ask me. Yeah, you didn't ask me. Do you have to give up your wife and your dog for this?
Yeah. So you get to live for free, but Giselle and the dog have to pay to live in an apartment nearby.
It's going to be rough go for them, but I think they'll make it with the help of Christ.
Exactly. If they can really dedicate their lives to following Christ. Here's a question unrelated to anything at all. How do you feel? How do I not make this personal? Do you think this is weird? I think it's weird. I have a friend who's married. She's been married for a while. And you ever like scroll the Venmo feed just for funsies?
Not for funsies, but sometimes I go into Venmo to do something and I see like the first couple and I'm like, why? This shouldn't be a social thing. I shouldn't be seeing other people's things.
I love it. Sometimes I'll scroll just for fun if I like run out of other social media. And she and her husband Venmo each other for everything. I'm talking like, here's $10 for my half of the pizza. Here's $12 for dinner last night. Here's $30 for this. Here's the rent money. Here's this. And I'm like, listen, you guys are legally married. You can't just either joint checking. That's a personal decision, but you can't just like one of you buy the pizza and one of you buy the this, and then it just evens out. Like, I'm so confused.
Yeah. For something that small, I'm surprised by it. Like I wouldn't do it. You know, like if it's a bigger transaction, sure. Maybe Giselle or I are going to send each other like, oh, here's, you know, my half of that. Or, oh, yeah. I said I'd pay for that type of thing, but I wouldn't be like, here's the $450 I owe you, you know? Like,
right.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Like, I always think when they buy a house, is he going to like Venmo her half the down payment? Like,
it's going to be a big Venmo. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait to see. Anyway.
It seems like we've said all we had to say about EZA. Should we get to the facts?
Please, facts.
I want the truth!
Face the facts, dokes.
Facts have no place with an organized religion.
Let's start with the ratings. IMDb gives this a 7 out of 10. The tomato meter gives it 85%, average rating of 7.1, 164 fresh reviews, 29 rotten. The audience score is 77% with an average score of 3.8 out of 5. The movie had a budget of $8 million and grossed $75 million worldwide. The critics' consensus? It owes a huge debt to older and better teen comedies, but Easy A proves a smart, witty showcase for its irresistibly charming star, Emma Stone.
Yeah.
which there were so many videos of like the director being interviewed being like, she's going to be a star. And I bet right now he's like, I was right. Roger Ebert gave it 3.5 stars, said it's a funny, engaging comedy that takes the familiar but underrated Emma Stone and makes her, I believe, a star.
Totally.
John Anderson from Variety, is Olive practicing prostitution? Hair Splitters would say no, but Hair Splitters likely won't be seeing Easy A. With its silliness, over-the-topitude, and fabulous leading lady who caps her fresh, charming performance with a musical number at the end. Which, having put these reviews together beforehand, what musical number at the end?
You gotta knock, knock, knock on wood, baby, better knock.
Oh, I feel like much more of a musical number, because that, I don't feel like that lasts that long, that like I thought of it as, this is the end of the movie, was... I got a pocket full of sunshine. Like, that's still in my head. I'm like, fuck.
Yep. I love going, I got a pocket.
Very impressive greeting card.
Yeah.
Perry Nemiroff from Cinematical. Steve Carell and Will Ferrell have nothing on Emma Stone. She doesn't need dirty jokes, farces, or a cliche shtick to get the job done. She's just a natural. And last one, Melissa Anderson from Village Voice. Easy A tacks on a sound message about a teenage girl's right to do with her body as she wishes. The 88 preceding minutes aren't much more relevant than, as one character snarks, a gossip girl in a sweet valley of traveling pants.
Hmm.
Yeah. You want to hear the Letterboxd ones?
I do.
Shay. Olive Pendergast be like, story time. I faked being a slut at school for weeks. No clickbait.
Okay.
Sophie. I love my parents a lot, but if Patricia Clarkson and Stanley Tucci showed up, I'd have those adoption papers signed within seconds.
Oh, yeah, no question.
Featuring Dante from the DMC series, where were you when you first saw Stanley Tucci's overwhelmingly masculine forearms, which I didn't notice, but apparently it's a thing.
Okay.
And last one, PJG. This was written in 2017, so before Poor Things. Emma Stone has only given one Oscar-worthy performance in her career, and it wasn't La La Land.
Yep, 150 billion percent agreed with.
The movie was directed by Will Gluck, who also directed the recent movie Anyone But You, Friends with Benefits, and Peter Rabbit. The screenplay is by Burt V. Royal, who also wrote Cruel Summer, along with episodes of Gigantic and Recovery Road, but I saw that he has written more... plays. So Dog Sees God is one that I actually know that I saw that he wrote.
How did you see that? Because I have also seen that.
I don't remember. Did we see it together?
I think Scott may have been in that. Would you have come with me to see Scott in that play?
No, because I remember who was in it. Because I remember Eddie K. Thomas was the star of it. And I think Elijah Dushku
was in it.
Oh,
so you saw it like on Broadway?
I think it was off Broadway, but yes.
Oh, maybe I went with you to see it. And then also Scott was in it. I don't know.
These were definitely
different
times.
Charlie Brown.
Yeah, it's Charlie Brown, but it's like it's a parody of it and more adult.
Yeah, and there's like, it's like vignettes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've also done a monologue from that.
Okay. I don't know what that is. Oh, a monologue. I thought you said a momologue, and I was like, okay.
No.
Emma Stone was nominated for a Golden Globe and won an MTV Movie Award for Best Comedic Performance.
Good for her.
The movie stars Emma Stone as Olive, who you know from Zombieland, Poor Things, and Cruella. Penn Badgley as Woodchuck Todd, who you know from Gossip Girl and You. Amanda Bynes as Marianne, who you may know from All That, The Amanda Show, and She's the Man.
Stop. Did you watch
The Dark Side of Kids TV?
Yeah. The Quiet on Set.
Yes, I did.
Okay, same. Thoughts. Quick, brief.
Really weird to see all those people as adults.
Agreed. Dan Schneider. Can
terrible
him
boss.
Or,
better than Brian Peck.
Thank you. Agreed. I think Dan Schneider should not be taking the heat for this. He was
a bad
boss
be.
At a time when people were getting away with shit they shouldn't have been getting away with. He is definitely not the only one. And I watched an interview with him. Did you watch the interview he did after the fact answering?
I feel like I know what you're talking about. I think I saw like 5 minutes of this. I didn't watch the whole thing.
I watched the whole thing. It was only like 10 minutes. He was like, I own what I did. It was wrong. I am so sorry. I would never, you know, and it felt sincere.
He's gross. He made his millions. You're done, homie. You don't get a free pass back after 20 years of grossness. You don't get to say, we're sorry. Like, you're done.
Yeah. I think the only thing he really can't apologize for is like the gross innuendo jokes on children's television. That was like, yikes.
Yeah. If it had been like a one-time thing, you'd let it go like, you know, they slipped an adult joke in there. Maybe they're like, it's just something
or
funny
like
for
it
us.
Slipped through the cracks and nobody really put
when
two it, and two
when
together.
When it's a very recurring thing and when it's cut together in a montage, you're like, oh, ooh.
Yeah. But yeah, Brian Peck, who then just went to work on Disney Channel. No problem.
Yeah, that's grosser. Crazy. How?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's fucked.
Crazy.
Back to Easy A, Dan Bird as Brandon, who you may know from Cougar Town and Young Sheldon. Thomas Hayden Church as Mr. This can't be right. I wrote Thomas Hayden as Mr. Church. That's not correct. who you may know from Sideways, Spider-Man 3, Spider-Man No Way Home. He's been in a lot of things other than that, but I had a lot of people written down, so I didn't write more down.
Yeah,
but you know him from things.
Sure.
Patricia Clarkson as Rosemary, you may know from Shutter Island and the Maze Runner movies. Stanley Tucci as Dill, who you may know from The Lovely Bones and the Hunger Games movies. Lisa Kudrow as Mrs. Griffith, who you know from Friends. And I'm not going to say the rest of these. I wrote down too many things.
It's fine.
Yeah. Like, I wrote down Fred Armisen and what you know him from, and he's in one scene. Why did I do that?
He's in one scene. But, you know, his scene, I think they could have made him funnier.
Yeah, like his only joke is really, come on, you bumped into the picture frames on my desk. Like, I was like,
yeah,
I know Fred Armisen's funny. You could
It was strange that they hired someone who is known for being funny and then didn't really give him funniness.
Yeah. The fun facts we have here, Emma Stone's audition was her opening webcam scene. Allegedly, Emma Stone dropped out of the movie Sucker Punch to do this movie. Allegedly, Jennifer Lawrence originally auditioned for the role of Olive. According to a 2018 interview, Amanda Bynes decided to quit acting after watching herself in this movie. When Brandon asks Olive if she'll go out with him, she counters that he had just told her that he was Kinsey 6 gay. This refers to a system devised by Indiana University sex researcher Dr. Alfred Kinsey in 1948. In the system, sexuality is placed on a continuum ranging from 0, exclusively heterosexual, to 6, exclusively homosexual. It makes as much sense as a modernized version of The Scarlet Letter to go with that, I guess.
I suppose.
Emma Stone had an asthma attack during the fake sex scene.
That's funny.
Despite the realistic portrayal of high school, writer Bert V. Royal was homeschooled and never attended high school.
Huh.
The foreign film that Olive goes to see is titled Der Scharlachrotbuchstabe, which is German for The Scarlet Letter.
You are so good at German, Dill.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah. And Penn Badgley had to wax his chest to be painted blue.
Oof.
And according to Emma Stone, she was inspired comedically by movies Trains, Planes, and Automobiles and The Jerk.
Ah.
And that is the end of
movie.
The facts.
That's great. All right, Dill. Well, are we going to do our new segment?
Are we pitching?
Yeah. Let's pitch.
Here's my quick pitch.
Pitch me hard.
Here's the pitch.
And pitch!
You just pitch?
I don't need to hear the pitch.
All right, Gab, do you want to go first? I feel like if you brought it up, you have something.
I'd like to go first. It's sort of a half-baked idea, so I'm hoping that you can help me flush it out a little bit. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I'd like to take EVA, and I'd like to turn it into a movie titled Tough Q. And it is a movie shot from the perspectives of the parents of Olive. So Stanley Tucci and Patricia Patricia Clarkson. Where their lovely, awesome daughter, who has never gotten in trouble and has absolutely no issues, is suddenly acting very strange and dressing strange. And they don't want to pry because they trust her and they're cool parents. But they do want to figure out what the hell is going on. And so they start to talk to some other parents and they start hearing some rumors. And without pressuring her or assuming the worst, they take it upon themselves to find out exactly what happened. Tough cue.
I like it. I like the idea.
Thank you. I don't know who would direct it.
We don't need to go all that far. Mine was Dirty B. Olive, now in college, is framed as and ostracized for being a witch, which is this time parodying The Crucible.
Oh my god!
I was like, we gotta keep it going with Emma Stone and these weird high school books.
That's so good.
Yeah.
What if she goes to a tropical island and it's Lord of the Flies themed?
Or she goes on a road trip and it's the Odyssey.
Ah, look at this. Or she has sex with her mother and it's Oedipus.
Oh my God.
Okay. Anyway.
And there's the law.
Yeah.
I'll give you the win, but for your first pitch, not for your last pitch.
Thank you. Yes, yeah. Tough cue.
I would see tough cue. All right. Enough about your pitch for tough cue. Let's do some tough Q&A and get to back to mail. That was terrible. We're going with it.
No, you got to keep it. It's too good. It's too bad.
Fuck
all right.
Do it live.
Blow the dust off. What is that from?
It's Bill O'Reilly freaking out.
Oh, that's right. Okay, that's
Which,
great.
In retrospect, right. One of the better clips of him.
Honestly, one of the least frightening.
Mail time! When you control the mail, you control information.
Mom asked me to ask you if there's any mail for us here by mistake.
What?
All right, so we got two comments related to the Great Mouse Detective. First from E-Curb, who was commenting on our thing about Radigan and Basil and their rivalry. We bred mice and rat boys as feeders for our ball pythons, and I can confirm they are nasty creatures that pee as they walk. So now, what do we know? We know that they pee while they walk, and they've got giant testicles, so not good.
Sounds like my little brother. All right, keep going. I hate that. First of all, yes, but second of all, I just was thinking about it. Was the first thing that came to mind when I thought of somebody like pissing all over the seat. He couldn't aim. He was a little kid, but
Dad,
then I thought
he's
about
not 3 years old anymore.
Testicles. I know. I'm sorry, but he was so little. Oh God. Oh, okay.
He could buy a pack of cigarettes. Jesus.
Not yet. But in a couple days.
Oh my God! No, we'll leave it that.
Oh my God! I'm so upset. Thank God nobody listens to this.
Thank goodness.
Oh my God! Actually, listen to this shit. Last night, I had a first session with a personal training client, an assessment session. And so we were just chatting and getting to know each other. And he was like, so what do you do outside of fitness? And that list is very short. So I said, I actually have a podcast about movies. And he said, oh, really? What is it? And I said, it's called Movies to Watch Before You Die. And he goes, I've listened to that podcast. And I said,
Bullshit.
No, you haven't. And he said, yeah, I have. And I said, are you a Batman person? And he said, more of a Robin guy. And I was like,
what does
okay,
that mean?
I think he was just joking. Like, are you a Batman person? No, I'm more of a Robin guy.
Okay.
Come on, I really had to explain that to you. But anyway, Mike, if you're listening, and I am certain you are not, but nice job last night.
If Mike was listening, he's going to hear you turn down Emperor's New Groove or the thing and be like, man, fuck this shit. She don't know dick.
Yeah, but unless he listens to the episode of the CrossFit Games doc, and then he's going to be like, oh yeah, she does know what she's talking about, at least in the purposes that he gives a shit about.
Fair enough.
Oh, I'm so upset.
Why? Because we're talking about your brother's balls and peeing?
Yeah, it's been so long since we've recorded an episode, I forgot how to be funny on the fly.
I can talk about Zach's balls and peeing. He does it all the time. Almost always outside. he's an animal.
He's disgusting. All right. Anyway.
All right. So we have a comment from Scotty Cameron on The Great Mouse Detective. From my understanding, when it comes to public domain, because that was a big topic of conversation many weeks ago, as it were, a work published after 1923 will no longer be subject to copyright 95 years after that work was published, regardless. The year after the copyright claim expires, the work and the assets enter the public domain. IP owners such as Disney can't extend copyright claims past the 95-year mark. I know in the 1970s, exceptions to the rule came into the fray that shortened the expiration to 70 years or extended it to 120 years. However, the general rule since 1923 is 95 years after the original work was published. I never thought this much about works entering public domain until Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey released, because it was the first time public domain had been used to morph a children's book and cartoon icon into a horror movie villain. I was aware of franchises that enter the public domain, such as the pulp magazine heroes like the Black Bat, the Shadow, the Spider, and Zorro are now in the public domain, but no one ever thought to make those horror movies. Instead, public domain was just used so anyone could tell whatever stories they wanted with those characters. Then again, those characters weren't in works aimed at small children and subject for the degenerates who made the Elmo Kills Barney videos to finally make official works, where characters like Mickey Mouse, Tigger, and Winnie the Pooh murder people. I doubt that kind of thing will happen when Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Spider-Man, and Captain America enter the public domain, because the appeal of making those characters viciously murder innocent people just isn't there. We may see those characters kill bad guys, then again, that's what those characters did in the stories that are entering the public domain in the 2030s and 2040s. I think horror at its nature is always very exploitative and will always try and like, hey, what can we monetize to like make a quick buck off of? So I guarantee you that like, yeah, there will be a horror movie where it's like Spider-Man's gone crazy and he's murdering every Mary Jane and Felicia Hardy all over the place, you know? Like, yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, who wants that?
Who wanted Winnie the Pooh doing a murder movie?
Absolutely no one. That's why I'm flabbergasted that it exists.
And they've already made a sequel, and there's a whole universe in the works. Because the other thing about horror is it's cheap. You can make it for cheap. You know what
How
I mean?
How so?
Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey is a perfect example. That movie probably costs max $1 million, which don't get me wrong, I don't have $1 million laying around.
But that's low for a movie budget.
Yes, and it's low for a movie budget that has built-in recognition. People know what Winnie the Pooh is. So it gives you a marketing advantage to say, well, we've got this Winnie the Pooh movie where he murders people, and there's an interest in like Winnie the Pooh murdering people. Okay. There's no name actors in this, you know. Robert Downey Jr. isn't going to be running away from Winnie the Pooh.
Right, right.
You make it cheap, you make it fast, and you put it out there on video on demand or straight to DVD. It doesn't even need to go to theaters, and it'll make back its budget. You know what I mean?
I suppose. Yeah.
Should we get to the email?
Please. I'm jumping out of my seat.
The one and only Keen Machine is back for the Great Mouse Detective. Greetings, Dill and Gab. And Dill and was one word. So Dill and Gab. I am obsessed with this past week's selection. I loved this movie as a child, along with Secrets of Nim, Once Upon a Forest, and other dark animation from this time period, which is odd because I'm not typically fond of animal-centric stories. I guess I just always had a taste for film noir in some way. Does this qualify as film noir? Well, it does now. As soon as I saw this episode pop up, my mind immediately started singing, "Oh Radigan, Oh Radigan," and I promise it's been at least 15 years since I've seen this film. So whoever it was in those reviews that said the music wasn't memorable, they were dead wrong. Loved our special correspondent's mighty return to finally clench that movie to watch before you die. I learned so much about this era of Disney and all that surrounded it. Thank you for that fascinating info. Gab's growing soft on these animated picks. Just a few more and we can wear her down into endorsing a Batman film yet.
Nope.
Oh, come on.
There will be another cartoons. Attempt. Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton or bust.
There will be another attempt. Congrats on another fine selection. Dylan, I look forward to seeing this added to your personal collection. That's the deal, right? Every movie that is deemed worthy gets a home in the Pollock household? I should think so. The irony, I did buy it.
Of course you did.
I bought Easy A also.
Yay!
So, you don't know which way the verdicts are going to go on this one, I'll just say.
Yeah, thanks for giving that one up.
That's all I care to type for now, so keep it keen, Keen Machine. And that is the end of our mail.
All right, well then I guess let's get back to this riveting mystery of what the verdict will be for Easy A.
We shall.
Do or do not. There is no try.
The guilty will be punished.
Sentence to death.
Gab, it's your movie. You go first.
Well, Dil, I had really fond memories of this movie, and the things that I remembered loving the most still hit. And that would be Stanley Tucci. And the fake sex scene. I did think it was great. Otherwise, I'll say it definitely was a better, more relatable, funnier movie when I was younger. I think as an adult, I see the plot holes a little bit more. I didn't necessarily feel like it was as good as Mean Girls, which is kind of the bar against which all teen movies are measured for me. And so I kind of left feeling like I enjoyed it, but it didn't hit the spot quite the way I thought it would. But Corey, who had never seen it before, really enjoyed it. And it made me think, you know what? Not every movie has to be the best movie in the genre to be really good and really enjoyable and worth a watch. And I think Emma Stone is fabulous. This is the performance where I think she really figures out who she is. And in movies like The Rocker, or what's that other movie that I fucking hate that she's in?
Superbad.
She hasn't quite nailed it yet. So it's like, I get it. I kind of get it. And then here it's like, oh, okay. Witty, charming, funny, self-deprecating. Like, it just works perfectly. So I'm going to go ahead and vote for this to be a movie to watch before you die.
See, it's funny. I feel like you besmirch her, like, the Rocker and Superbad performances. I don't think this is that different from her Superbad performance. Like, if you told me that that was Olive and Superbad, I'd be like, oh yeah, these could be loosely connected. I will say I really enjoyed it by the end. I highly would recommend people watch it. Like, I was surprised it's not really on any streaming service, which was a bit frustrating for me. I totally think it's watchable. I totally think it's worth a watch, especially if you've never seen it. I think it had enough missing that it just doesn't get over the bar for me of being a mood watch where you die, but I really enjoyed it. Like, if somebody was like, what should I watch? I'd be like, have you seen it? Yeah, just check it out.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't necessarily entirely disagree with you, but I think it to put it in CrossFit terms, the chin just rose right over the bar enough that I'll call it a rep.
Yep. Yep. And there's the full extent of my knowledge.
Now,
Dylan, I got that just barely.
I just want to say I've really enjoyed doing this podcast with you, but unfortunately this will be my last episode as I am going to leave to focus on my relationship with God.
Not to mention how you've been dressing the last few days, no judgment, but you kind of look like a stripper.
Mom!
A high-end stripper for governors or athletes.